morning, y'all. Thank you for tuning in to Rosie on the House. We've thrown the door wide open. Come on in to my house at Rosie on the House, and let's visit about anything having to do with your house, home, castle, or cabin. We've got some special guests in studio here this morning from Oldcastle Superlight, Dave Endres and Steve St. LeClair. I almost said St. Clair, Steve St. Clair. Sorry about that, Steve. We want to talk about everything masonry. We want to talk about living a maintenance-free life. We want to talk about freeing you up so you can go on an Arizona staycation every single Saturday, not stay home caulking, painting, repairing the silly sticks and stucco homes built of styrofoam and chicken wire, right? That's what we're here talking about. You know, for years, for centuries, the Native Americans figured this out.
You know, it was funny, at the Heirloom Expo, I felt like I was being talked to by myself, only as it relates to seeds. Because when we're sitting there talking about building and quality of building, we always go to masonry. And sure, you can get something cheaper now up front, but what's your long-term payoff going to be? And
That's
the whole theme of the expo. Sure, you can get a fast food now, but what's your long-term payoff on slow food growing? I felt like I was being talked at by myself, only in the seed world.
They were good
at
non-GMO
world.
Seed cultivation, right? That was all heirloom seeds back then, right?
That's right.
The Native American Indians, you know, Jennifer and I just recently completed a hike through a part of Arizona where after about 3 miles of hiking up a fairly steep incline, you reach a box canyon. Both sides of this box canyon is completely lined by first one and two-story Indian ruins, absolutely one of the most beautiful, gorgeous places in Arizona I've ever been.
Absolutely lovely.
I originally discovered it in about 1970, and I've been taking little mini trips back there about every 3 or 4 years just to go back and experience it. You know, the historical significance of masonry is pretty substantial. You know, the Hohokam, back from 450 to 1500, right here in the Salt River Valley. Now, I want y'all just to hear me out on this. From Buckeye to Florence, all along the Salt, the Verde, and the Gila River, at one time supported a population of almost a quarter million Native Americans. Is that unbelievable? You know, and then you've got the Snagua up 500 to 1500 up in the Verde Valley and the Coconino Plateau, and then you've got the Salado, which are over there in the Tonto Basin, which is what Jennifer and I were exploring. These are all ruins that you go see that are anywhere between 600 and 1,000 years old, and they're still there. You go through ghost towns that were slammed together with 1x6 siding and 2x4 studs, and there's nothing left. That's why it's called a ghost town. So we've brought in two specialists, Dave Endres from Oldcastle Superlight. Dave, thanks for joining us on this Saturday.
Thank you, Rosie, for having us.
Thanks for coming on in. And Steve, thank you for coming on in.
Absolutely. Great to be here.
So we wanted to talk about masonry. We've talked about the history of masonry, in particular as it relates here to Arizona. You know, I broke into the trades through the masonry world sometime after all those ancient civilizations. It was about 1972. But Dave, we started with a masonry fence contractor that was putting up fence for Von Dix and the Maloof brothers.
Yep.
All through Scottsdale. And the first time they gave us a home to build, it was a two-story home. And do you remember how we used to get block up the scaffolding?
Yeah, you used
back
to,
in the 70s?
An OSHA inspector would have a cow if he saw people pitching block up by hand and fellas catching it and throwing it up to the next fella.
Oh, I'll never forget when I saw that block truck delivered. They used a forklift to pull off pallets and pallets and pallets of block. And all I had done was put up fence block. And I mean, I'm like 16 years old. And so the guy comes in and I'm working with our good friend Duncan Sellers. He and I were the laborers on the job. And the guy says, okay, guys, we need all that block up there, the second lift of scaffolding. So I'm thinking, well, that'll be easy. Just bring that forklift over here. We'll have it up there in no time. Forklift loads up to the back of the truck and pulls off the property. I'm thinking, this can be tough. And there's a very definite technique to hand tossing 50-pound, 8'8" 16s? They're right at 50 pounds?
About 34 pounds.
Oh, 34. They feel like 50 after the first hour.
End of the day, they feel like 100.
But you like it, when you're thinking of basketball and you're at the foul line, you can shoot the grown-up style or you can shoot granny style. And you literally, granny style, throw these concrete block up to the person on the first lift of scaffolding. He, granny style, pitches it up to the person on the second. And you do this for all day, moving block up two lifts of scaffolding. And it's the only way we used to do it.
Yeah, there was no other way.
But you think OSHA would be upset with that right now?
I think they would have a conniption if they saw that today.
Just a tad.
Hey, well, all that time, Superlight has been the innovator and the leader in the block industry. Give us a little bit of story about the Superlight story, because that's a homegrown story.
Well, it really is. The Superlight started back in the 40s, and it was a gentleman that, you know, saw a need for masonry in this area. Brick was very predominant. And as you say, with the Indian Native American populations, there is a recognition that durable, you know, masonry-type construction was necessary and that it was the best product for this area. So he started a little block plant that grew. And then at one time, believe it or not, at one time, the Superlight block plant was the largest block manufacturing facility in the world. And this was in about the mid-60s or so. They had more machines making block than any other single plant in the world. And if you look at a lot of the older parts of town and the best parts of towns that still look well, you know, the durability of that masonry, and that's all it was. Everything was a block home.
Everything was a block home. We had, and you date back almost as far back as I do, but we had Hallcraft back then. Mm-hmm. We had Suggs. We had Cannell. Yep. We had John F. Long.
Yep.
I mean, they all built with block.
Absolutely. Beautiful homes.
And then we had the innovation, and it had to be about, check me here, but it had to be about 1974, 75. When we started seeing this foam and this chicken wire and this one layer of stucco, I think we called it Western One Coat back then. I don't know what it's called today.
It still is. Western One Coat is a company that's around.
Okay. And we converted a lot of the masonry to 2x4 studs, the styrofoam, and the chicken wire stucco.
And a lot of it was, for most folks, it gave the home builder something different that offered that looked like a masonry home but wasn't that. You know, for whatever reason, they felt that they could save a couple pennies in their pocket, but not looking forward to the owner and the owner's life cycle and the life cycle durability of the structure.
Yeah. And then with the innovation of that, of course, masonry loses its market share. Commercially, we still primarily a masonry market.
Yes.
For good reason, durability, right? When you're putting up an investment like that, you want it to last a long time. And then Superlight, in conjunction with an engineering firm here in town, I can remember when they came out with this. It was, the engineering firm was Caruso Scott Turley, right?
Caruso Turley Scott.
Okay, all right. And I can remember when they unveiled this, and this has to be back 82. Okay. And why don't you talk about what they unveiled? I thought it was incredibly ingenious.
It definitely was. You know, when you look at masonry, especially in Arizona, being relatively high desert, with the temperature swings that we have, people got concerned about R value, but R value isn't the only measure of energy performance for a structure. With Integra, what we had was the thermal mass of the product and the fact that it took a long time for heat or cold to get through that structure. The problem was, once it did, it flowed relatively quickly. And the idea behind Integra was to try to eliminate the thermal bridging through that wall. So what some folks from Superlight did, along with Paul Scott and the other folks at Caruso Turley Scott, was to try to take a traditional masonry unit that's got three webs connecting the two face shells and eliminate a lot of that bridge. So you just ended up with a single bridge. And then another bridge that happened in that wall was the grout, the concrete that went into that wall to reinforce it after the fact. Instead of using traditional rebar and grout, we went to a post-tension wall where there's a post-tension steel wall or steel rod to give that wall its structure.
You're tying the roof plate in to the very bottom of the foundation with one continuous all-thread rod that goes the entire length.
Absolutely. And then we could go ahead and replace that grout that was in the wall with a high-density polyurethane, highly insulated foam. And all of a sudden, we were keeping the traditional strengths of masonry and offering something that had a great R value at the same time.
Well, and I'll tell you the other thing I saw it as a builder when I saw it come on the market. I thought, you know, some of the other products were overemphasizing R value. They were trying to get to, well, we've got this foam configured wall that goes to an R40. And I said, yeah, but it still leaves you an R2 window, right? Am I wrong?
No, absolutely.
And then you have to treat all the trades. You have to train them how to build with this brand new product. I thought when Integra came out, we would basically put every lumberjack out of business because we would only need lumber at that point for cabinets, doors, and roof framing. And we could get rid of all the studs. I think it's one of the best products on the market. It was then, and it still is today.
And we've got we still have a number of builders that are using it and do see the value. Folks like Robeson Communities, ironically enough, lately, you mentioned the history, the ancient history of the Indian civilizations here in Arizona, on the Gila River Indian Community right now, and the Akchin Indian Community. There's a lot of Integra houses going up right now. For all those same reasons that we just talked about.
Yeah, Integra Block is the Sierra Club and the Spotted Owl's best friend. Because you don't need the lumber near what we used to have to lumber. And still, it still hasn't made. It's one of those products that I just think has never really gotten the market share it truly deserves. More when we get back, talking concrete block here with our friends from Old Castle Superlight, Dave Indries and Steve LeClaire.